Hello and welcome to Dinesh Guarda YouTube podcast series. Once again, powered by openbusinesscouncil.org and citiesabc.com. And we keep profiling global personalities. And I'm very excited today because I'm actually finally interviewing someone that I respect a lot and I know for a long time. We actually collaborated shortly for some time in the past. But I want to introduce to the audience Dr. Paolo Tasca, which is one of the most influential personalities in the world of blockchain, digital assets, and I would say 360 as well, a global academic, a professor in the UCL, University College London, and as well the founder of the London Center for Blockchain Technologies, and recently as well the Distributed Ledger Technology Science Foundation. So, Paul, welcome to the series. Great to have you here.
Amazing. Thank you, Dinesh, for having me here after many years we know each other. We have finally find the opportunity to talk to each other. And this is the best chance we have. So happy to be interviewed.
So, Paul, so you are a professor and a personality in the economic world, but as well very involved in the industry, especially in the research. And you've been actually one of the first personalities working worldwide in the areas of blockchain and all the areas of technology associated and the digital assets and a lot of other things in fintech and so forth. So before that, and of course previously that you've been working in the Deutsche, you were as well a lead economist and you've been working with the Deutsche Bundesbank in Frankfurt and a lot of other different multiple organizations. So I want to start by your basis. So as an Italian living in London and as well citizen of the world, I'm sure. So how did you start all this career? A bit of your background, personal, academic, and some of the highlights in your career. I would like to go through that. I know that is another podcast, but at least a summary of that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, James, for asking me this. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to welcome you into my journey that I did start basically in 2009, 2008, when I left Italy. As an expat, it's very difficult to get your profile upstanding in a competitive environment. I was leaving Italy back in time to finish my PhD. I moved to university to Zurich, to the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, to the ETH Zurich, and when I arrived there, after a few months, I got a huge scholarship from the Swiss National Science Foundation based on the my PhD research proposal. That's how I started to build my academic career. Since then, I basically then been working from abroad since then. So I've been working there, working on the on initially on trying to, you know, I was an economist trying to be, you know, to challenge myself and to study economic dynamics through the lens of physics. So I tried to, you know, apply the field of econophysics, trying to apply models that came from physics, from computer science, to understand the economic dynamics, especially in financial sectors. And that's is when I started to learn about network theory, graph theory, stochastic dynamic processes, all these methodologies that comes from statistical mechanics, applying them to finance and economics at large. Was a very interesting experience in my life because I was pushing myself outside the comfort zone. I was pushing myself outside Italy. I was pushing myself into a group of scientists, computer scientists, mathematicians, engineers, and I was the only economist. And this gave me the chance to grow professionally and personally. So my recommendation for the young generation is always to try to put themselves in an uncomfort zone. When you are you feel uncomfortable in the area where you are, is when you are growing, because you are learning from the others. So that's where I push myself, and that's where I started to learn about crypto. In 2011, some of colleagues of mine start talking about crypto to me. I was really skeptical back in time, because I considered them like a game. I mean, when we talk about crypto, back in time we're talking just about Bitcoin. It was the only one available, right? So when they started to talk about Bitcoin, I was really skeptical, because it was basically for me like a game coin, a coin for Second Life, if you remember, or this type of virtual realities. I never had the chance to think about the impact that this coin could have on the real markets. But then after a few months, I look into it, and I was looking into the market participants. I realized that there were only one cryptocurrency exchange back in time, was Mountain Gox. Some of you may remember. And there were not many players out there. And some of my colleagues say, okay, let's try to get data from these Bitcoin transactions, which is incredible, interesting, because it's free. And generally, when you are an economist or data scientist, and you have the chance to work with the free data, which is freely available, then is like the holy grail, because otherwise you need to pay a lot of money. And Elon Musk know how well, and not only him, how well can monetize the data, their data. So when you have a platform, which is basically this, there was this Bitcoin platform that enabled you to get free data, then the idea from my colleagues that pushed me was, okay, let's do some research. Let's collect this data. Let's try to analyze this data. And maybe from this Bitcoin economy, we can infer something about a real economy. So we can derive some conclusions that can potentially be applicable to the real life economy that everybody is living. I was a bit skeptical, and I told them, listen, that's interesting. We can do research. That's what we are paid for. We are researchers. I was at ETH back in time, as I said. But I want to enter into also the market space, because I realized that there is only one cryptocurrency exchange. Basically, at that time, I think Mountain Gox was channeling around 80% of the all transactions in the world. So it was a monopoly, basically. So what I started back in time was basically wearing two hats. I was starting some streams of research on this Bitcoin economy, collecting data and analyzing this economy, and at the same time I started working on creating a cryptocurrency exchange platform with a group of friends and colleagues from ETH. That's where when I started and to put my first to do my first steps into the Bitcoin, the crypto economy.
That's a quite impressive. First of all, in 2011, of course, very small people were there, unless you are a super hacker or someone in these parts. And there was MontGov. There was as well the Silk Road, a lot of things that happened, but as well, there was all the innovation that came out of that. And there was a lot of things. I remember as well in 2011 that actually I built a Bitcoin sentiment analysis. And I remember in City of London that I came from, at the time I was coming from an investment bank, and they told me, If you tell anyone that you are even just touching this, they will throw you out of the city of London. So this is 2011, 2012. Now we are 2023.
I remember your project. It was a great project.
Yeah, it was, but that was in 2016, 2011 when you started, when I started as well. That was a completely different ball game. So I want to ask, so from Switzerland, you end up in, of course, UCL, and you created two of the most influential organizations in this area. So tell us a bit about the story of the two projects, and for people listening to us, we'll put all of this, but the bio is available. But we're talking about, I think from chronological order, is the University College London Centre for Blockchain Technologies, which is UCL CBT. And recently you created the Distributed Ledger Technology Science Foundation. So before even that, a bit of the story from Switzerland to UK. And of course, yeah, the UCL is one of the top universities in the world. And now you created that with university. And this was actually created, I think, 2014, 15, which at the time was still in a major university. There was not this kind of research, unless probably some things related with Cardano or Ethereum. Actually, first Ethereum, and Cardano came from Ethereum. But tell us a bit about that history, because that's very interesting for people listening to us that love blockchain and, of course, cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, it was an interesting period of my life, because as I said, I started these cryptocurrency exchange experiments with a bunch of friends and colleagues from ETH and other from outside ETH. We started this, we were in Switzerland, and we started this, looking to this compliance process. We wanted to be compliant with the FINMA. FINMA is the Swiss SEC. And, back in time, it was very difficult to talk with them because no one were really doing much on this. And it was a kind of an important education process. It was an interesting period because at the same time, I was called by the Deutsche Bundesbank you mentioned before, which is basically the German central bank, to work for them because they were interested in the tools that I developed to analyze the economic dynamics and the contagion effects from one bank to others in the system. So we were talking about 2014, 15. The period was the period of the European sovereign debt crisis that came after the 2008 crash in the US. And for I also accept the challenge to join the central bank. It was an interesting experience for me. I wanted to go there and join the central bank. And when I joined the central bank, I told them, we're not working on the contagion. My goal is to bring here the expertise and to help you create a research team research on decentralized finance, P2P finance, all related things related to P2P lending, crowdfunding, and crypto. So I was lucky enough that I received a full endorsement from the president, Jens Weidmann, from the central bank, who gave me the possibility to create my team there and to start my research on decentralized finance at Deutsche Bundesbank. And indeed, they give me basically, the interesting, possibility to cultivate my interest for this new, growing ecosystem, Bitcoin and a few other cryptocurrencies after in 2014, 12 emerged and during that period when I joined the central bank. So it was interesting. For me to really work with the central bank that gave me the possibility to create my team and explore these dynamics. And some of the work that I did in this space are indeed work that I did when I was at the central bank of Germany. But at the same time, I was also wearing the hats of the disruptor in Switzerland because I was building this cryptocurrency exchange. So it was an interesting period of my life wearing the head of the central bank in one country and the disruptor in Switzerland. At a certain point, I had to, you know, to park the cryptocurrency exchange. One after though, when we received the green light from the FEMA, so we received the green light from the FEMA to operate the cryptocurrency exchange, crypto to crypto and crypto to fiat, which was very unique back in time, because of a technological characteristic of our platform that enable us to use multi-sig wallets that enable us to only partially hold custody from the client. So we were basically being exempted by FINMA from holding the banking license, because back in time either you hold the banking license or either you cannot enter that space. So we were basically exempted because of our multi-sig wallet solution, custody solution that we did implemented for the platform. But as I said, I was parking this project back in time because I wanted to focus more on the work I was doing at the central bank, and I was very happy in that period because I received a full endorsement from the president Jens Weidmann. The central bank, if you are in the research area of the central bank or any other area of the central bank, you only have a limited scope or mandate, which is basically the scope of research is basically confined within the mandate of the central bank, which is basically financial stability, banking supervision, monetary policy, and all these areas. So you cannot go beyond basically the perimeter of the central bank. I was thinking though that back in time that the beyond crypto, the blockchain could have an impact in other sectors like healthcare, supply chain, identity, and so on. So I wanted to have the freedom to explore more, to dig more into these type of things. Therefore, had to choose against my will to leave the central bank and to go in an environment that enabled me to explore without limits the full potentials of the blockchain. And the only environment that will enable everybody to explore the full potential of any technology is the academic environment. So I decided to go back to academia and to build around me the possibility to explore the full potential of these technologies. So I had two choices here, Dinis. Either I would have gone back to Switzerland, or I would have go to another university. I decided to go to London, to University College London, because I did some research around the strengths of this university in terms of computer science. I know that I knew that blockchain is a business process technology, but it's not a lot on technology. So if you don't have a strong computer science team, is difficult. Not that the ETH doesn't have, but UCL were back in time keeping themselves with the new staff members that joined the UCL back in time. So I was very happy to see these movements, and of course I was aware that the blockchain first sectors to impact was finance. And therefore, being in London would have mean being close to the financial center of Europe, to the one of the most indeed financial center in the world. So that's why for me UCL was a kind of a must-be choice. So I went there, it was not an easy, of course, passage, because my goal was to explore what where indeed, well, basically the University College London was doing with respect to blockchain in terms of structuring, lab center, etc. So I asked them through one of my weak links. I had a working professor working at the University College London. I asked them if they were basically equipped with a lab, with a center, with an institute, what they were exactly doing with respect to this field. And at that time, they had, as I said, experts in the distributed system, cryptography, but they were not structured. So I proposed them to go to there and structure this in a center, in an institute, to create a center for blockchain technologies. So we did submit. I was still living in Germany back in time, still working at the Deutsche Bundesbank, but we did submit an application for approval to UCL. And after a few months, they came back and say, the center has been approved. Dr. Tasca, you can come over and run the center if you want. This is the center. But with the condition that you need to fund the center yourself. There is no much commitment from University College London on this. So it was also, a very difficult choice for me because I was full-time employed by the central bank and living, a very secure, job at the central bank for uncertainty was a challenge. So I did take the challenge. I quit my job in Germany and then relocate to London, where I started from scratch to create the center, run for fundraising, mostly from the industry, from the private industry, but also from public grants, and start building this center from scratch. This was the 2015.
Well, that's impressive.
Yeah, since then we have been doing quite a lot of work, to be frank, with many players from all over the world, major Fortune 500 corporations backing us, public organizations, internet sovereign organizations, for example, the United Nations. And I have been keeping working with, through the center with the major central banks of G20 countries from all over the world, but also beyond this G20 with many central banks from other countries, in order especially to educate them on blockchain, crypto, especially after the 2017-18 when we started talking about CBDC, central bank digital currency. So that's basically what we have done since the 2015 with the UCL, Center for Blockchain Technologies. It became one of the first, certainly one of the biggest in the world, counting on, if I'm not wrong, on 300 research associates from all over the world, research and industry associates, so leading experts from the field and academics that have appetite for blockchain and distributed systems. We try to build a center along three verticals. As I said, I'm an economist. I always put myself in an uncomfort zone. So I wanted to have the economic perspective to look into this problem, but also to look into this problem from a technology, of course, perspective and from a legal perspective. So technology experts, economists, social scientists, and lawyers, expert in regulation, being shaping our research community over the last year. So that's what we have done with the center. CoinDesk recently, I mean, the last 2 years rank us as the top one in Europe and one of the biggest in the world. So we are happy about the achievements, the results we receive. We receive a few other awards from leading layer one blockchain infrastructure providers. So we hope that we can continue with this work we have done. There will be a kind of a new initiative coming out soon, which regard the UCL Center for Blockchain Technologies. Unfortunately, I cannot share with you now, Denis, but I hope your audience and you can read about in a very short time from now, which will be basically about the next stage of the UCL Center for Blockchain Technologies.
So first of all, congratulations, because I know that is an immense amount of work, research, and as well, you are one of the first global personalities that brought credibility to the blockchain industry in a research, scientific, and academic environment. And of course, all the work you did one of the biggest banks in the world as well, which is quite impressive. So let's work. Start still with you, and then I want to work a bit about the industry. So you've been always, like you said, in the blockchain center, you self-funded and you created a lot of relationships, but you were as well a professor at the university. So you had as well the academic footprints where you actually did a lot of papers and you're still doing. So, but you've been working, like you mentioned, with several central banks, companies, startups, associations, United Nations, and as well, you are co-chair of the Treasury Management and the Token Economics Committee of Ederash Graphs, one of the biggest actually tokens in the world, and as well the co-founder and chief strategist of Quant Network. So tell us a bit about this work that you've been doing with the industry, with the major players, and how do you see as well how was this trajectory? Because I think for people listening to us, even now, there's a lot of contradictions. If you look at the US government and the SEC, the way they look at cryptocurrencies, and there's a lack of education that is quite alarming still, even after the industry has been growing so far and actually right now being all over. Every major player from Amazon to Google is using blockchain technology.
Yeah. So that's true. So I've been trying to always... an academic that go out in the streets, talk to people, not close myself in an office and do abstract, far from the world research. I try to always do applicable research that could make sense for the industry, and I try always to capture the need the problems from the industry. And being myself an advisor and entrepreneur, this help a lot. Having been working with the industry enable us to create this new initiative which you mentioned before, which is the DLT Science Foundation, which has been empowered by Edera and Ashgraph. And this is a new initiative that we launched in March 2023. This is the result of a career spent, if you want, in this field. This is a technology foundation, independent organization that want to be agnostic and want to be an authoritative, independent voice in the blockchain space. They're working in the area between industry and regulators. We want to bridge, these two communities through our programs that are in the space of education, research, and innovation. So I recommend your audience to go to our website to look at what we are doing. The website is dltscience.org, and they will see that we have an open grant program. At the moment, is about $5 million. Open to our university network members. We are launching a new grant program for science fellows, which are basically talents that we want to work with. And everybody is basically welcome to apply if they are interested to work with us. So having said that, Denis, let me say that having worked with the industry so far for many years, you know, and you know, having worked along you know, all the waves up and down of the crypto seasons, you know, have taught me a very basic you know, a very basic lessons I took home, which is basically the fact that you know, in this space, there is no you know, if you want to really make a difference, you should you know, focus on the foundation, not on the you know, on the speculation itself. We have seen so many speculators, even recently with the FTX scandal, with Sam Bankman-Fried. So these guys have been around so for too many too much time. They did too many scams and frauds, and I'm happy to see that the justice eventually come after them, and they size them out. This is basically the way that this industry can mature. So as soon as and the quickest we can get rid of this you know, type of behavior in the industry, the better it is for the whole ecosystem to grow. So I'm a bit you know, tired to hear that crypto is bad and blockchain is good, because crypto is good and also blockchain is good. Both of them are good. But I understand that those that think that crypto are bad, because they are basically suffering probably from these frauders, from these people that run Ponzi scheme, from these people that don't have respect for the retailers. So the work that we are doing also in terms of educators, in terms of entrepreneurs, with our foundations, through the university, is to educate the entrepreneurs, to educate the young generation, to educate even the regulators, to put in place the tools to prevent this type of you know, asymmetry information, because all of this problem, most of this problem, are basically materializing because of asymmetry information between the experts that understand very well the technologies and the majority that are lured by easy profits without basically really understanding deeply what is happening under the curtain or within this black box. So we have a mission, the DLT Science Foundation, which is basically bringing back trust, if you want, to the crypto and discovery true. This is our basically saying, building trust and discovery true. And we are going to do this by releasing a platform of tools that everybody can use that will enable mitigate three forms of information pollution, environmental pollution, and financial pollution. So we have three areas of this range of products that the users can use. And when I talk about the scams and the spams, these are in the area of information pollution. As long as we are able to confine these users to prevent this type of behavior, then we are basically providing a safer environment for everybody to play a role, and we will basically put a foundation for this ecosystem to grow. So that's basically our mission, providing the tools that will enable basically this better, you know, solid foundations for the space to grow, in a way that crypto will become good together with blockchain.
No, it's very important what you just said. I think the challenge right now is how we can actually create a better awareness of the industry. And actually, in the end of the day, any industry has scams. If you go, I was privileged to meet one of the founders of Nasdaq. And when Nasdaq started, Maddox was a member. So I think it's kind of, we cannot put everything in the same box, and especially technology is so I would say disruptive and 360, touching almost all the areas of sectors like blockchain and the cryptocurrencies are effectively very disruptive and mostly make people rethink, because the sense of greed, because of course everyone thinks, okay, if you are in cryptocurrencies, you'll make a lot of money. But if you are greedy, of course, you get into trouble. Now, there's one friend who mentioned Sam Friedman from FTX, but in the end of the day, it was a failure of the regulators. It was not even completely a failure, because in the end of the day, it's a company that didn't comply with any governance, any kind of basic assertive part, especially.
Well, it was a failure also from the investor side, because they didn't do the proper due diligence before giving money to this guy. They should have used more deeper intelligence, and probably they didn't have the instruments, and these guys that run for money are basically exploiting this lack of information. That's what this happened. So providing tools like we are trying to do with the DLT Science Foundation will help not only the regulators to prevent this type of situations, but also the investment communities, the professional investors, the retail investors, to detect and monitor crypto projects and be warned if something there is something wrong. At the end, I've seen over the last years a kind of a consolidation. So we're still in the era, if you want, of innovation technology, which is on this innovation technology, which is characterized by fragmentation, rivalry. If you want technology, rivalry between different platforms. There's not yet, a clear standard out there, and this will take time to get more clear and clear, understanding of what are the major platform that will be dominating the blockchain ecosystem. In this particular phase, more instruments we create to help the decision maker to be informed, to take informed decisions, the better it is for this ecosystem to go faster, right? So I welcome clearer regulation. I welcome clearer tools. I welcome all those attempts to bring transparency and clarity into this markets.
And it's more critical than ever. So you are an academic and researcher. So part of your thesis and your work and a lot of the papers is the vision of the centralized monetary system as envisioned in the theory of Austrian economist Friedrich Hayek. And you've been actually working on this, how fiat currencies can coexist with all these systems, and you mentioned CBIs. So tell us a bit about your academic and research vision, how you see still cryptocurrencies, digital assets, of course, the blockchain technology underlying, and CBDIs. Because at the moment, we are in a confluence of a bit of a, I would say, cyberpunk perspective, how we're looking from a research, from a perspective. But as well, all of this is coexisting. But in the end of the day, the Forex fiat markets are 4 trillion transactions per day, and all the crypto together is less than 1 trillion as we speak. So a bit, how you see all these things working together?
Yeah, I think we are in a very difficult transition phase of our socioeconomic systems. I would say even socioeconomic political systems, but I don't want to touch the political side. But there is an exponential growth. We observe and we witness an exponential growth of these technologies, not just blockchain, but AI, big data. We are producing in the 2022, we produce more data than consume and produce more data than what we have done in the previous 10 years. By 2025, we are going to double the amount of data we are going to produce this year. So we need technologies to handle this, all this data. We have experienced, you know, decentralized platform controlled by tech giants. We have seen and witnessed how badly they are as a gatekeepers of our data. We have now a new technology, blockchain, that can enable us to build a Web3 platform that bring back the data control to the end users. That's fine. That's a good vision, I would say. But it's very difficult, very complex to navigate in this space, because we also observe a kind of a blurring of these technologies together. So we, for example, are now at the T-Sense Foundation working on decentralized AI systems. So the blurring between a blockchain and AI. And what I've seen now is basically that in terms of blurring these technologies is basically creating a kind of a level of technocracy where only the few that master these technologies can empower the citizens with the instruments they need for their socioeconomic business. So it's important that this technology is well mastered, but also well governed, and I go back somehow to the political vision of the society you want. So you mentioned what is happening in the crypto space. Yes, so going level lower to the crypto, we see a kind of a huge competition in the crypto. You mentioned Hayek. Hayek was he's a Nobel laureate. He was he wrote a book in 1976 on denationalization of money. So he was considering money as any other commodity. He was trying to promote, the private creation and users of money beyond the monopoly control of the governments. It was not the first one. Also, Milton Friedman in the 80s of the last centuries was basically promoting the he was welcoming the creation of an automatic platform to control the monetary policy rather than giving this under the control of the governments. So what is happening there in the crypto space is a kind of a competition between privates, within privates, and between privates and public. So the central banks are somehow have somehow been challenged so far by these new technologies. The central banks have been forced to enter the crypto space through the CBDC, the central bank digital currencies, and this is not something that is easy for a central bank to do, especially because the central banks are very traditional and very big institutions that are not easy to adjust and accommodate to market shift like any other private company or any other startups. So when I was at the central bank 10 years ago, and we were talking with the president in our private meetings, he was always telling me, Paolo, don't push the central bank too much, because the central bank will never become a tech company. The central bank will never have a tech team, and we will never master these new technologies. I think that if I look back 10 years from that time, the central banks, generally speaking, change a lot. The central banks are becoming more tech savvy. The central banks are changing their schemes. They are probably challenging. So these new technologies are challenging the role of the central banks in the economic system. So I see that we are basically seeing a challenge for the central bank that is potentially a good challenge for them to cope with, that will change very much their role in our socioeconomic system in the years to come. And I see that there will be a much more competition in much more currency competition than what we were used to see. It's not even by regulation. It's basically driven by technology, because this is kind of inevitable. So, and you simply can, regulation can simply, try to provide some directions to an underpinning dynamic, technological dynamic that is already taking place. There is not much they can do, because the technology is already evolving. You cannot stop the technology evolution. You simply need to deal with the dual side of technology. The dual side mean either the technology can be used for good or the technology can be used for bad. Crypto, Bitcoin at the beginning was used for illegal Silk Road, you mentioned before, for illegal traffic. But Bitcoin can also be used for tracking, charity donations, for good or for bad. Depends. The dual side of technology always exists in any technology. So the regulators can simply govern this process, but cannot stop or prevent this process to take place. So I see here that with the increased sophistication of the technology, the blurring of the technology, the growing understanding of the technology from the industry, from the community, from the regulator, from the politicians, we're going toward a very much tokenized economy, where everything can be easily tokenized. And when we are going toward a kind of a highly tokenized economy, we are going to change dramatically the concept of money. So we are going to escape what is called, the monetary constraints, so the need for money, because everything can become money, everything can become liquid, everything can be cash. And if everything can be cash, what is cash? So, and what is the role of cash issuer? So that's basically what I can see from not taking place in 2 years, 5 years from now. It will take time, but the technology will inevitably lead us to cashless type of world, where you really don't need cash because everything is cash. And therefore, this will change dramatically the concept of cash and the role of the players in that space.
No, it's going to be more and more, and I think more challenging as well. I know that we are running out of time, but I still have one or two questions if you have time. So in your areas of expertise, and I'm talking you, of course, as a thought leader, as an entrepreneur, and as well as an academic, you've been working on, of course, blockchain and blockchain applications in the financial sector, blockchain interoperability, CBDCs, Internet of Value. So, and then one of the areas that you have as well, that is, I know, quite strong, is big data and AI for sentiment analysis. So, of course, right now, everything is about AI, and AI is becoming increasingly more important for everything. And at the moment, we are discussing how far is AI and how sentient is potentially AI, or at least the basic incipient parts of AI. But as well, you are the founder and chief wizard of ShedCheck, a big data company that applies AI on 1 billion public shed records on social media to extract market sentiment, this specifically for crypto and stock markets. So tell us a bit how you see all of these things, because like you said, these technologies, they touch everything. At the end of the day, right now, we are getting to a new civilizational part. We can call it fourth industrial revolution or society 5.0. But the challenge is that in one end, people are not completely prepared for that, and much less governments. But in the end of the day, technology is not going to stop. And the same people might not like cryptocurrencies, but it's a huge thing in the world economy. And a lot of countries actually depending on that, at least populations. And like you said, there's a lot of things that are right now already mainstream. But let's start this how this acceleration of the technology capacities and especially integration with the AI and blockchain, because in the end they can use blockchain for AI, for ID, and then the big data and AI for a lot of other things. But how do you see this? It's a big question, sorry, but if you can at least try to get a bit some of your notes on this.
No, Dennis, I'm not sure I want to talk about ChatCheck because this is a project that I brought into the foundation. So probably I want to talk with respect to these questions with the head of the, as a chairman of the foundation, right? Yeah, so I think that's fine with you.
Okay, no, feel free. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what's these projects we are doing at the foundation around data, big data, are project that's as you mentioned, I inherit from a previous activities and projects of mine, and this is basically. Was a project that started from a simple consideration that probably I mentioned before, which is basically the fact that we are basically producing an exponential growth of data we are producing and consuming every year, and the fact that we are producing this data, we are basically challenging ourselves. In the digital age, we live in a kind of a paradox, Dennis, which is basically the paradox that more data is not even is not always better. Depend because most of the data we basically generate or consume every day are basically simply what we call information pollution. So it's not really providing any insights or any intelligence. So in a growing economy, in a growing data economy, we need the tools that enable us to give us back time and tools that instrument that enable us to digest all this massive amount of data. And that's what we try to do with the Dirty Sense Foundation in the area of information pollution. So we try to basically digest billions of data and try to extract the intelligence from this data, especially for the crypto space, for the crypto economy. We target basically crypto community chat groups in different platforms. Could be Reddit, could be Telegram, could be Twitter, could be stock tweets and many others, CoinMarketCap and so on, chats or Bitcoin Talk and so on. And for each of these community, we monitor their their discussions, and we try to extract some intelligence from their group discussions online. And this could potentially be very beneficial for many blockchain layer one infrastructure. They want to monitor their community, the progress and the growth and the quality of the discussion in their community. It will be very beneficial for the moderators if they want to to monitor the quality of their participants, the engagement level of their participants in their community. Would be very beneficial even for regulators if they want to detect any attempt of scamming or Ponzi scheme. Could be very beneficial for analysts or investors if they want to measure the quality of the mood and the sentiment of the community about some topics. So there are different metrics that we are developing that could potentially be beneficial for different type of target audiences. So these are basically metrics that measure different dimensions, and these basically will be very much intelligence tools that can be used by different target audience. That's basically what we do to serve the crypto community. So what we want to do is to provide these tools to for the betterment of the crypto economy, because as actually we want to, as I said before, remove the inequality. Crypto is bad, blockchain is good, but we want to say crypto is good, blockchain is good. But in order to do so, we want to bring clarity in the space. And the tools are basically the first attempt that we do with this, with this, with this exercise.
That is, I think these tools right now, we need to know how to use it, your education, your work, and kudos to all of this. It's really very impressive. And we need it probably more than ever, this kind of organization, the work you've been doing on the research. So one last question, more technical. It's a big one. I want to touch again in blockchain and AI. So at the moment, if you look at the different kind of, we call it emergent technologies, disruptive technologies, by far, AI and blockchain are the most advanced and most disruptive ones. And of course, within these two, there's a lot of subsets of technologies. So as someone that has been one of the top researchers worldwide on blockchain, and someone as well that has all this academic research and in one of the leading academic organizations, but as well working with big organizations, I mentioned it there, central banks, a lot of different organizations. How do you see the next iteration, let's say the next 5 to 10 years? Because that's the biggest challenge that I think we all will strive, and we all need to be prepared for that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very challenging question. So, Denis, I don't have the crystal ball. So it will be difficult for me to foresee the future. What I see is certainly an exponential growth of a pervasive growth of the AI, which is already happening. Indeed, there is no much prediction here to make, in the sense that AI is already pervading every hour, every aspect of our daily life, as a business, so as household consumers. There is no much prediction in this. What I can see is a more an emergence of a new defined field, which is a decentralized AI, which is basically the possibility of bringing AI components in on a distributed network, and this is basically something that is somehow under development. I know that some layer one infrastructure providers are working on this. We are also working on this at the research level, and this means an unstoppable, if you think about blockchain as a censorship resistance, transparent, unstoppable, and everything will be permanently recorded, will be kind of an unstoppable AI superpower, AI machine that exploits a swarm of AI put in a distributed fashion. This could potentially lead to many, many applications, even to the, mentioned before, the information pollution also is related to the fact checks, right? So even having an AI swarm technology that is applied to fact checks is also a very useful application. So in medical sector, in many sectors, this could potentially be very, 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 very important. But this comes with some challenges. And of course, the challenges are related to the ethics of AI, rather than or the privacy of the data, rather than the blockchain technology itself. When you put AI on a blockchain, somehow you amplify the you know, the threats and the of the AI for the world. So that's why I think it's very important that we advance at the same level, not only at the technology side, but also in terms of ethics of AI, in terms of bringing some more awareness within the scientific community, within the, you know, the policymakers, of setting the rules for these systems to run in an equitable and a fair manner. What that means, equitable and fairness in this space, is very challenging, and I don't have an answer, unfortunately. But you understand that bringing AI on the blockchain, this problem will be amplified. So I really encourage, researchers, policymakers, analysts to look into these aspects. There are some already important institutes of and research centers that look specifically the ethics of AI and the social impacts of AI, and I encourage more people to work in this area.
Well, thank you so much. I know that I passed the time that was planned. I have much more questions. Probably we'll do a take two in when we have more time. But I want to thank you. I want, for people listening to us, we'll put all the links that Dr. Paolo Tasca mentioned. There's a lot of research. There's a lot of papers. The for the ones in London, of course, there's even a lot of events. And there's a lot of other things. There's as well paolotasca.com, the website, and then, of course, all the websites of the Blockchain UCL Institute and the DLT Foundation. I want to thank you. I want to thank you as well personally, and I think in the name of the industry, for the excellent work you've been doing. It's an honor to have you here. And as well, just there's a lot of wisdom in the things that we discussed in the last 1 hour. But I think that what I would say for people listening to us, and probably I would like for you to have a final say, is that we have to I would say, make the wave, not be strived within the wave, because, of course, this will create a wave and you can make it a tsunami, or at least can make it and you can surf on it and thrive on it. So I'll pass the last word if you want to say something to our audience. And I want to thank you for being here.
Thank you, Dennis, for having me here. It was amazing. Thank you so much. I think these type of platform you are putting in place are very useful, and I welcome very much, because this bring, I hope, some inspiration, some informative education to the audience, and it is very much needed, especially in this sector, which is basically very complicated. So my last words on this is that basically I hope that the young generation will engage much more into these new technologies. I hope that they not simply passively, absorb this technology or passively use this technology, but I hope they can, put their brain and understand how these technologies work, because easy in the young generation hands the power, the direction of our future society. And the more we enable and help the young generation to understand these technologies, to really help them to know how to navigate through these technologies and not be passively spectators of what is happening, I think we are going to serve the society the best. So my hope is that there will be more education programs, more research, more innovation programs, more initiatives like yours that help really the young generation, but not just the young, even everybody, to understand these dramatic exponential changes that are happening in our society with these new digital exponential technologies that are changing our life. So I want more active engagement from the people. We need to go back we need to give back the power to the people. And in order to give back to the power to the people is through education and through research.
Thank you so much.